Boom, we're on. Today's guest, we've got boxer Luke Campbell. How are we, brother?
Yeah, I'm good. Yourself?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Thanks for bringing us into your gym. Beautiful place.
Good for you boys to be here.
Yeah? How's life?
Yeah, no complaints. Life is good. Obviously, my last fight didn't go as planned. And, you know, I had a few days of sulking. I was upset and whatnot, but... You know, we dust ourselves down and we move on, don't we?
Yeah, that's all you can do is just push on for the future. Phenomenal fight, which we'll touch on later in the interview. I always go back to the start with my guest, brother. Where you grew up and how it all began?
Yeah, so I grew up in Hull in West Hull. And just, you know, your average family. I think there was four of us living in a three-bedroomed house. And, you know, just normal. I played a little bit of rugby growing up, rugby league. And then, for some reason, I wanted to go into boxing. No reason for it. Didn't know anybody that was involved in boxing. Didn't probably know a single boxer, but someone wanted me to go into boxing. I was got to about the age of 13. I was a little short, chubby kid that played rugby. Went into the gym, really loved it. And from there, I just kept going. Kept going from there, lost about 9 kilo, and then started growing tall.
So you're a wee fat ass?
Yeah. I was a second row rugby league player. Yeah. So I was one of the forwards. Mm-hmm.
How was your schooling?
Yeah, it was all right. I'm dyslexic, so I always struggled in school. I was taking out some of my classes with a couple of other my mates, you know, having to read different books and practice spellings and things like that, but it never stopped me from doing anything what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it's mad that a lot of people, like sports stars I interview, a lot of them do struggle with dyslexia. They kind of find another, because your schooling isn't what grains you into the person you become later on in life. And do you think that's one of the reasons why you became so successful? Were you ever laughed at or like bullied at school?
No, I'd like to say I was lucky there. I never got laughed at. I think I never got laughed at or bullied for it because I was never bothered about it. I was never shy that I had like something that was stopping me from being with the rest of them. You know, I had what I had, dyslexia. It's not a big deal. And I never shied away from it. So I think being open on about it, no one never mentioned it to me.
What gym did you box in at Hull?
So the first gym I was at was a gym called Fish Trades. Bit of a weird name, I know. Yeah. But it's been, they had a lot of success 40 years ago, I guess. It's an old gym. So I started at that gym, Fish Trades. Had 9 fights as an amateur there and won only 3. So after having 1 season there, I decided I need a better coach and I need a better gym where I can do some good sparring and progress. So then from there, I moved to St. Paul's, which is actually probably about a 5-minute walk from where we are.
Because I know when you speak about a defeat after a fight, you've not had many, but it fucking disheartens you. So how did that affect you then at a young age, if you lost 9?
Yeah, do you know what? Mad, because I look back on it now thinking, wow, I think I lost like 5 in a row at one point. And I just think, why did I carry on? What was driving me to keep going? But I think the passion of just wanting to be better every day was what kept me going, give me the drive to like, no, it's all right, I've had a loss, but I don't want to lose, so I need to keep working harder. I need to get back in the gym and practice this and do that. I think that's it gave me more drive.
Mm-hmm. You've got one of the biggest amateur records in British history, I think, is like over 150 fights. Why were you fighting so much? Is that just to keep constantly improving?
No, really. It was one where I think in about 26 fights I got onto the international scene. So I had about 26 fights at your gym locally and then doing championships. But then when I got picked for England, I started going away on tournaments. And when you start going away on tournaments, you could have 3, 4, 5, 6 fights in a tournament in some of them. So I guess if you're going away on 3 or 4 tournaments a year and you're winning goals and you're having 3 fights there or 5 fights there and 5 fights there and 4 fights, then the numbers start adding up.
When did you start realising you could have a career from boxing?
I think it got to 2008. I actually didn't make the Olympic team that year, even though I was number one in the country for winning the ABAs.
Why is that?
They sent another guy who qualified in the first tournament for that Olympics, for Beijing Olympics. So obviously I didn't get a chance to go there, but listen, everything happens for a reason. So later that year, I won the European Championships in Liverpool, and I was the first British man to do that in 47 years. I think from that point, I thought, yeah, I can mix it with the best. You know, I've got 4 years now for the next Olympics. I can mix it with the best and I can do this.
Was that your incentive then to go to the next Olympics, the 12th?
Always.
2012?
Always for the Olympics. I never thought about being a professional boxer, not once. Yeah, I wasn't particularly interested in that. What my goal was to be an Olympic champion.
And you got that gold medal. How was life before that? How? Because I've spoke to a few boxers now, and some of them have had 2 and 3 jobs to try and keep their head above water. How was your life running up before the Olympics?
Yeah, so basically when I was on GB camps, I was getting picked to go on training camp. So you maybe get picked, like you get a letter through the door saying, yeah, you're down in Crystal Palace between this day and that day, do you accept? And then you'll confirm it and then you'll go there. But in between stuff like that, I've always wanted to work for myself. So I'd go out knocking on people's doors, kind of wash your driveway, kind of clean your gutters, kind of wipe your windows, you know, things like that. So, because I'd always want to do it for myself. So I'd just do that in between. But it got to a certain point where I was doing that every day, and I was also training at home, going through the ABA championships here. And I thought, listen, something's got to give here, because boxing became a little bit of a chore. So I was out trying to earn money. And then when I was finishing at the end of the day, I'd had to go straight to the gym. So it was long days. And then I was tired going to the gym, and I just thought, I got to pick here. So I decided to stop working, and then just fully concentrate on the amateurs and get going down to the GB camps and things like that, and stop worrying about earning money. You know, and I was surviving on, after paying a couple of little bills here and there, paying my fuel down to Sheffield and back every week, I'd have like £30 a month to myself. So it became a bit of a game with me to see how much I could save instead of what I couldn't spend. And I just went with nothing.
Yeah, just to keep progressing. And just,
I just went with nothing.
Did you have that belief, though, that you were going to be as successful that you are?
Well, what I did have was, I had the belief that I knew I'd give it 100%, no matter what happened, whether I made it or I didn't, I could live with myself. And that was more important to me. But giving 100% and living with myself, whether I got there or whether I didn't, I could be happy with myself, because I know I'd give it my best shot.
How was it when you got the call to go to the Olympics in 2012 in London, your home fucking place, basically?
Well, it wasn't so much of as getting a call, because we was all on the GB camps, and there was like 3 or 4 guys at each weight, and we was all getting sent off to different tournaments all over the world. And it was the one that was like performing at the tournaments, bringing back the gold medals. You know, you might go to one tournament, you might get beaten that in the first round, and then someone else in your weight has gone to a different tournament, you might have won gold in that tournament, and then it's like, you just had to show that you was winning goals and you was performing. And then that in itself, then they picked the best one then to go for the first qualifiers for the Olympics, which was the World Championships in Azerbaijan in 2011. Obviously, I was performing, I was winning gold medals, so I got picked for that. And then I went to that and qualified. I got a silver medal in that, and I qualified for the Olympics there.
How was that feeling, winning gold at there? Were you favourite?
No, I think I was like, I think I was ranked number 43 in the world going into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you going in there favourite though, in your mind? Did you believe that you could bring home the gold?
I believe it's getting a good draw is always helps, but I believe that if I got a good draw at first, that I can go on, I can win. You know, and I got beat in the final by 2 points by the Cuban.
How did is that your relationship with Anthony Joshua started?
When did that start? No, that started probably 2009.
So way before?
Yeah, like 2009, maybe the end of 2009, coming to 2010. I think that's when Joshua come on the camps. And then we went to Europeans in Turkey together in 2010. Joshua got beat in that one. We all got beat in that one. I got robbed by the Turk in the quarterfinals for a medal.
You're always getting fucked over by the judges.
Always, always. It happened to me so much. It sort of just became part and parcel. But I'm in the European Championships in Turkey, fighting a Turk for a bronze medal, and they robbed me blind. I beat the Turk comfortable, and they give it to him. But that for me was a big moment because I'd been winning gold medals all over the place. And if I'd have won a medal in that tournament, it puts my money up. Because the only chances you can get to put your money up on the Great Britain camps is if you win major medals at a Europeans, a Worlds, or Olympics. Your medal goes up. So you're on certain funding. I think it's like D funding, C funding, B funding, and A funding. I think A funding is like $2,200 a month, tax-free. Then it goes to $1,500. And then I think it goes to like 850 quid a month, and then like 400 and summit. And I was on like, I think I was on at the time 850 quid a month. So that, them not giving me the decision from that, mm-hmm, stopped me from going to B funding. So I was gutted.
So it's survival mode as well when you're in the amateurs too. The more obviously events you win, the more funding that you get.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of people will probably fade away because they can't afford to.
They can't afford it, yeah. Yeah.
How many people were you in the amateurs with then, in Olympics and stuff, to then, how many's kicked on in life?
Do you know what? I feel like the lads that I was with at GB, I've all gone on to do decent things in the pros or in life. Like, it was a real good mixture. Who do we have? Obviously, Anthony Joshua was there, Josh Taylor, myself. Who else was there? Tom Stalker, Charlie Edwards, Cal Yafai. That's just a few. Anthony Ogogo. I used to train with George Groves on the England camps. Tyson Fury, been to tournaments with him around the world in the early days of the England camps.
Is that a good vibe? Or is it everybody alpha males? Everybody competing in...
Yeah, sort of. I mean, everyone competes at their own weight. So, like, if me and you are on the training camps together and we're not at the same weights, then we could get on. If we liked each other as pals, yeah, we could get on real well. But if you was at the... No one never gelled. If you was at the same weight as me, no matter if we was... If we could have been good mates, we'd never gel because we're at the same weight.
Constant competition.
That's just how it was. Yeah. You was my competition. You wanted my spot, what I want.
How was life after you won the gold?
Very different.
In what way?
In a way that before the Olympics, I was quiet person, private person, liked my own business to keep. You know, I was quiet, didn't like, don't know, audiences and people knowing what I was doing and where I was going and things like that. Just a quiet person that just had his head down, working towards the Olympics. And then all of a sudden, everybody knew who I was. And then social media was kicking off, like, back then, just starting for myself. And then people, like, seeing where you was. And I didn't know how to be myself. I didn't know how to act. How should I act? You know, it was... I think for the first, like, 10 months was really difficult for me to adjust, to adapt, to sort of... figure out who I was like and who I was trying to portray I was on social media and things like that.
Yeah, that's the difficult thing though, especially if you get shot into the spotlight, especially winning Olympic gold. Boxing's massive. Like, you tend to see a lot of the gold medalists who win at boxing end up superstars, and it can be difficult because then everybody wants a piece of attention. They want your interviews, your stories, but then they dig about the dirt of the past, and then you've got the fucking trolls online. How was that a big major factor on mentally, or did you enjoy it at some point?
Just as walking into a place, seeing people look at you, and then sort of seeing people talk about you as you're walking past. Like, it's a bit weird. Because I'm just your average man on the street. I don't see myself as nothing more. And why should I? Just because I've been successful in what I do. Don't mean I'm better than the next person. You know, so that for me was a lot to digest and to sort of get sort of used to it, people coming up, getting pictures with you and things like that. And I'd never wanted to get too big for my own boots. So I think I'm better than people when I'm not. I'm just the same as them. They go to work and put food on their family's table, and I just see myself doing the same thing. But I had a lot of eyes on me doing it. That's the only thing different.
Yeah. How long did it take you to go pro then after the Olympics?
I think I turned pro like, I'd like to say at least probably 10 months after. I didn't do anything. I went into a TV show, Dancing on Ice.
Got to the final?
Got to the final. Don't know how. I think it was the great city of Hull what was ringing up on the phone.
Back in your corner?
Backing me and keeping me in, to be honest. Got to the final in that. It was a great experience. Really enjoyed doing it. Met some nice people in there. And obviously I grew my profile, you know.
Which is your main objective?
Give me the opportunity to grow my profile, get more well known before I actually go into the pros. I was never wanting to turn pro. Mm-hmm. I only turned pro because I just didn't want to live back with any regrets, thinking I didn't know what I was capable of. So
you seem very business orientated. Sorry for cutting you off there, but you seem very business. Many businesses you got?
I got about four.
What have you got?
But no one really knows.
I don't know.
No one really knows. I got Cool Hand Promotions, which is my main business. I got a property business. I got a gym business now. And I've got a couple of other little things what I'm working on what I believe will be really good. I'm currently building a mental health app, which I believe will help a lot of people.
Well, that'd be massive.
Very excited about that. I wish I could talk more about it, but I'm not there right yet. But I'm very passionate and excited about that.
Where did you get that from, the breadhead mentality to make a crust and stay kind of grounded, to invest well?
Yeah, I just, for one, I've never wanted to work for anybody else. Always, like, I don't know why, I don't know where it's come from, but being a young lad, growing up, I just thought, I could see my mates going out working hard 12-hour days, bumping tiles up on roofs, like grafting for like 30 quid a day. And I used to look at that observantly and I used to just think, the guy who he's working for is earning all the money. There's no chance I'm working for someone and earning them money. I just, from being a young lad, I've always wanted to do things for myself. And, you know, listen, I have worked at Asda before, packing people's bags and cutting people's bread just to get a little bit of money in for Christmas so I could buy people presents. But other than that, I've always wanted that get up and drive and create something for myself.
How hard was the Dancing on Ice thing? How was that to adapt to dancing around the ring to then doing it on skates?
I think I had a fair few comments calling me Bambi on ice. A fair few. It was hard. Like, do you know, it's... Like in the boxing, I was always the first in the gym and the last out. When we was doing the ice, training for ice skating, I was always the last on the ice and the first one off. Just didn't have any passion in learning how to skate, but, you know, I picked it up. I did all right. I wasn't as good as a lot of the others, but I did all right.
That's good though, but it's different to try and do new things, especially... still young age and try to grow a brand and creating your name out there, and that's what it's all about, is utilising it to your advantage. The wave isn't always going to be there.
No.
So you've just grabbed your surfboard and done, fuck it, man, I'm just going to ride it. Got to the final, done well. Again, that would have enhanced your profile for somebody that's then private. How did that affect you again?
Yeah, well, again, that was all in the... I did that straight after the Olympics, so it was all in with it. And during that show, like... You know, there was celebrities in that show that have been celebrities for years, and you used to watch them on your TV years ago and things like that. And I just think, like, I seen how they sort of lived with it, and I thought, there's a lot of these guys that live in their own little world here. They live in a bubble. But because I'm an athlete and I've come from nothing and I've grafted blood, sweat and tears to get where I am, like, I feel like I was a little bit more real to reality, where I feel like a couple of them wasn't with reality.
Yeah, because it can be, it's a weird life getting attention. It's so weird that
it really is.
You can understand why people become recluses. You can understand why people turn to drinking drugs, because it's the 100%. Pressure of, I always say it, like the media and that kill people as well. And people that's in that life and that fucking bubble, as you say, it really does affect people mentally.
I just think if you're like really famous, like, I take my hat off to you, because you need a certain quality to be able to handle it and live with it and treat people like, I guess if you, I mean, I'm on a very tiny scale to certain people out there, and like, I just think like, they've got it all the time. They can't even walk down to the street to get some milk and bread.
Yeah, that must really affect people.
Yeah,
it's must really affect them. So when you turned pro then, what was your plans then?
I don't know.
Are you just winging it?
Just turned pro. But for me, I've always, if I'm going to do something, I want to be the best. You know, if whatever job you put me in, I'd want to be the best at that job. And I guess that comes from boxing. So obviously now I've turned pro. It's not the same as amateurs. It is different as you learn, as you go along. And, you know, now I'm a pro. I want to be the best in the world as a pro.
But you came out the traps flying. You were knocking people out for fun.
Yeah.
So you did. You had everybody's massive hype, next big thing. How, again, did that pressure come? Is it better being an underdog, does people prefer to be favourite? Because you were coming out and just knocking people out.
I was, and it was a strange time, because I didn't know if I was going to be a puncher or not when I first turned professional. I didn't know how I was going to be. I seemed to be knocking guys out with the right hand and the left hand, so, which was good. I think everything was going great up until the point where I boxed Mendy in my 12th fight. And it just opened my eyes to a lot of things. It's, as well as all the fans that I did have. Like, for one, I should have never been in the ring that night, but I was, and that was my own fault for going through with it. Two, I didn't have a team around me that looked out for me. And the other thing that I noticed was, like, I don't know whether it's England or whether it's everywhere, but so many people that was happy to see you fail.
That was
hard to digest, from having all the people that was backing you, and then all of a sudden you got beat and everybody's laughing at you. Like, it can be a real brutal sport.
That's
and I see it every day now. Every weekend the boxing's on, to be honest, like, they're all loving one guy, you know, and then everybody's slating him.
Yeah, it's sad. Josh Warrington fighting Saturday. I was gutted for him.
That was one of the examples.
I've got a lot of time for Josh.
Opened your eyes. Like, everyone was loving Josh, and he's 30, you know, and talking very highly of him. And then all of a sudden, it's boxing. He gets knocked out. He's give the fans, like, all the entertainment in every one of his fights, and they're all backing him. And then he gets knocked out, and then you see him getting slated by people and things like that. And I just think, just the brutality of the sport.
I think that's where you separate the champions from the losers, because people who go through that loss and come back, I believe he'll come back stronger. That's where you separate it, because then it's easy to put people back in their shell, because it's a knock back down to earth, isn't it, when you're in a certain bubble.
Yeah.
That happens, then probably for a few days you think, fuck this, it's too much, I'll probably quit. But real fighters will go, nah. Some of the fighters have had the biggest fighters and on this planet have had some serious losses, but they're coming back, isn't it?
Oh, 100%.
It's the boxer's mentality.
100%. And it's, you know, it's obviously, it's in him what he wants to see. But all them people that was commenting, like, me, myself, I've never commented bad about anybody on social media. Why would I pick out some guy and start dissing him? If anything, I'd want to give him positivity. So I was gutted for Josh.
Yeah, 2014 as well, just when you start turn pro, you wanted to take a break because your old boy was diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
How did that affect you? Because you seem very close with your dad in the videos.
Yeah, it's been so far a little bit of a stop and start, up and down professional career, really, because, you know, I had to take time out earlier in my career because my dad got diagnosed with that, and it hit me hard. Like, it was a real shock to me. I was going to the gym and I was sparring, and I wanted them to hit me and hurt me, you know, and I was crying behind my gloves with frustration and just what was going on. And I had to take time out because I can't be going in the ring sparring and wanting to get hit and wanting to feel pain and crying behind my gloves. So I just needed to take time out.
Is that like a bit of self-harming? Like trying to get people to hurt you because you
were in
pain? Yeah,
I guess because I was in pain mentally. You know, I wasn't bothered about getting hit, and I'm stood there inspiring and wanting them to hit me and hurt me. And I was just crying behind my gloves, not because they was hurting me, but just because frustration, yeah, I guess, and sadness.
The thing in life, like, you can born such a high, winning Olympic gold and turning pro and everybody loving you, and there's always those obstacles. And that's when it kind of makes you realise that this is what life's about. It's about family and try to use some quality time to then find some balance, because I'd imagine at your status that it can be like a whirlwind, because you done, was it your first belt was against, is it Tommy Coyle?
Yes. Yeah.
Was that in the hall, because it was he a friend?
Yeah.
And you, what stadium was that you fought in?
So that was at in Eastall, and it was that was in the Hull KR rugby stadium.
Was that real rivalry before? Because it kind of.
Do you know what? It certainly was. Yeah. People ask me, saying, "Oh, did you make it up? Was you pretending?" But it's one of those things. Like, we look back at that now, and we share that as a moment together. But back then, it was a lot of emotions flying through boxing. People acted out in ways that, you know, we wouldn't normally do, you know, because there was a lot of passion and desire and pride on the line for both of us. So, you know, it was all real, what you saw between us.
How was it winning the title?
Oh, it was amazing.
How was it fighting outside as well?
I loved it. Yeah, I had my debut outside in Hull with about 8,000 fans there. And I think there was more there. There was certainly more there when me and Tommy Coyle boxed, because I think that was the first time Hull had ever seen anything like it.
How hard is that, though, being an old friend? Because you put him down a few times in a fight. Even though he was hurt, you were still going in for the kill. How does that affect you as a boxer? Because everybody's got goodness and a soft side, but do you see that? Like, fuck me, just call the fight, or do you just try and go and do damage?
I just thought, back then it was all about, you know, kill or be killed, really, in the ring. You know, that's the way you've got to see it. Like, and that's the thing that is breaking loose from the amateurs to the pros. Like, when you're in the amateurs, it's just, it's a sport. It's a game of chess type thing. But when you're in the pros, it's literally, I've just got to hurt the shit out of you. Like, I've got to hurt you. You've got to go in there with a mindset, I've got to hurt him. You know, and that's a big difference from leaving the amateurs to going in the pros. But I spoke about this to Tommy last weekend, actually. And it's the things about boxing where it can be the best sport in the world and the worst sport in the world, because me and Tommy's talking together, and I've gone on a run, and then Tommy was suffering for months afterwards with depression and with pride being hurt and just in a very unhealthy place. And that's the thing about boxing, where it can be the best sport in the world and also can be the worst.
Because you lost your next fight, that was the first time you get put down. How did you said you shouldn't be there? Why was that?
Just because I got an illness. I got a bug like 10 days out for the fight. I was weak as piss. It was like the lights was on, but no one was in. The preparation I had wasn't good at all. I didn't have the correct team around me at the time. I had no one around me, really. No one there backing me. And I mean, that fight was taken on 3 weeks' notice against a guy that no one really wants to fight. It was a fight where I was given, where there was zero reward and very high risk. And I wanted to get in there and get it over with. Just like, I just didn't want to be in the ring that night. Should have never gone through with doing it. But I did. And it is what it is, you know. It was still a very close fight. I still thought I nicked the fight, to be honest with you. I got told I needed to score and win the last two rounds to win the fight, and I did. And I still didn't get it, but it is what it is. Everything happens for a reason, and that, I guess, from that defeat there, opened my eyes to a lot of things, what was going on around me, what wasn't going on, if you know what I mean.
How does that affect you mentally? Because you spoke about Tommy losing that fight and getting yourself into a depression. When you've been coming from such a high, undefeated, knocking people out, Olympic gold prior to that, how does that then affect you?
Yeah, I guess that did affect me in big ways, because it's like I say, I was surprised there were so many people happy to see me fail. Like a lot of them was there happy to see me to lose and fail or get beat, and I just thought, wow, like everybody was loving me 1 second previous, and then now everybody's laughing at me and hating me because I got beat, you know. So yeah, it was painful. And then there was a lot of big decisions changed from that. You know, I went over to Miami, trained out there, and went quiet from a year or 2 years on social media and everything. I was out the way from the press for 2 years, from the media, from my social media was quiet, just went very quiet.
Is that just to recharge, refocus, set new goals?
Yeah, rebuild myself, I guess, set new goals. I wanted to work in quietness, and then I've always wanted my performances to scream louder than my words.
Is that the best thing you think you could have done then, was move away? Is that when you were training with Freddie Roach?
No, I was training with George Rubio in Miami. Mm-hmm. I was out in Miami training with George Rubio, and you know, at the time it was all I knew. I wouldn't change anything, because I met some amazing people in Miami, still friends to this day. So I wouldn't change anything, but it's the thing, innit? If you know what you know now, back then you'd be different. Like, I probably wouldn't have gone out to America and away from my family for that amount of time, being away from the media and everything. What I should have done was, I should have gone around a few different coaches in the UK and trained with a few and see where I fitted in and see where I liked. That's ideally what I should have done. But because I'd done pads with George in the past, he was the only person that I knew that, you know, I enjoyed training with him. But it was just a hell of a commitment.
Yeah, felt comfortable with him. But again, sometimes that's the best thing you can do.
Yeah.
Is just fucking off away from it, because it's all outside noise. It is an illusion.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really make anything. Because I know you and your wife are really close, and you've obviously got 3 sons. Congratulations on newborn as well.
Thank you.
How difficult is on your partner when you're making these decisions?
Oh, massively. Like, she's backed me all the way, you know, and I couldn't have done it without her. Running the family at home, giving the kids everything they need, sorting the house out and just running everything. Like, I couldn't have been able to, you know, I'm the one that's heading for my dreams, and she's dropped what she's doing and she's backing me to go for my dreams, and I couldn't do it without her.
Do you think that makes a massive part of your life, that you've got somebody there that supports you to then kick on and be as successful? To have somebody that stands your corner instead of, because it can be difficult, it's a lonely fucking journey, but
yeah.
Do you think that plays a massive part on being successful, that you've got somebody there you can trust?
100%, yeah. Knowing that your family's good and everything's happy in there, you know, it's 100%, it makes you that more driven, and, you know, you want to work that bit harder, and you're a happier person once, you know, if you know you've got good solid family behind you.
How was that feeling getting your own back in Mendy when you beat him?
Yeah, good. I mean, it should have been that.
Is that a relief?
I knew I was going to beat Mendy. I always knew I could. Like, when I got in that ring, when I first fought Mendy, I shouldn't have been there. I was weak. I was drained. I was tired. The lights was on, but no one was in. Me turning up to how I know I can be, like 100% in focus, good training camp, feeling good, feeling strong. Feeling good to me feeling bad. He fought the weakest version of me, what I should have never shown him that night. And then me getting in the ring feeling good, it's a completely different story. And, you know, I think I'd probably give him one or two rounds out of full 12 rounds of what he had success in. But let me tell you, Mendy is a hard, hard man. Yeah. Like, I think that guy is chiseled out of stone. Like, and still to this day, no one wants to fight him. And I think he's won every fight since me beating him at Wembley. You know, so I still give Mendy a hell of a lot of respect because he's tough and he's non-stop comes all night long.
How was it, Linares? How was Linares' fight as well? Because that was a tough fight and on scorecard you could have potentially won it.
I thought I beat Linares. Yeah. And a hell of a lot of other people thought I beat him too.
He's a tough bastard as well, though, isn't he?
He's a hard, hard man. You know, he's a three... Here's another thing, you know, I'm an Olympic champion from the UK with a good fan base, and then I have to go over to America to fight a three-weight world champion in his prime, because he was in his prime when I boxed him, on his show over in America, and he was also ranked in the top 10 pound-for-pound list. I had to go over there and fight him for that title. I honestly thought I beat him. I thought I won 7 clear rounds out of a 12-round fight. Clear rounds. And that's giving him the extra round for the knockdown. You know.
How did that affect you again? Did you pick up? Because you started, you think you had a fight quick after that, did you know that?
He dropped me in the second, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I had a little, them two rounds, I had a little slow start. And then when he dropped me, I thought, I've never been dropped where I've been hurt. Always been dropped through. I've been off balance. If someone's dropped me, they've knocked me clean off balance. I've got up. I've never been wobbled. My senses have always been there, and I've never been hurt. So, but as I threw a hook and leaned back, he hit me with a straight right hand and just knocked me straight on my ass. But I was completely fine. And then when I got up, I thought you're embarrassing yourself here. I said, come on, let's go. That's what I said to myself in my head. And then from that third round, I thought I won from the third to the 11th. Mm-hmm. He like just outboxed him, was hitting him constantly with the jabs, and yeah, I mean, the biggest relief after that fight was for me to actually get, my dad died 2 weeks before that fight, so I was having panic attacks and everything, suffering with a little bit of anxiety and everything in the last 2 weeks of build up for that fight. So that was really hard for me to go through. I used a hell of a lot of mental energy to stay in the moment.
How was that when your dad died? Was it 2017?
Oh, horrible. I mean, I was away in Miami training at the time, and I was on my own. So I didn't have no family around me to talk to, cuddle to, or anything like that. So I just had to literally turn everything off. The emotions, the thought process, everything, which was freaking hard.
Yeah, but again, the memories that you'd have gave your old boy, man, from amateur career,
yeah,
winning Olympic gold, man, that, like, any boxer would give anything to have half of that,
yeah,
career, do you know what I mean? So it's, we spoke earlier, and this is what life's about. It's all about creating memories.
Yeah,
and,
massively.
And it's to kick on, and it can be difficult, especially going through a training camp where, you know, your old boy's passing away. My dad was the same. He passed away with leukemia, and you see them slipping and strong people just... Part of me always thought my dad would survive, even though he got 3 months to live.
Yeah.
I always thought, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then when they go, you think, fuck me, man, it doesn't really hit you too.
No.
I don't think I've still accepted that.
Yeah, it's, you know, my dad was on his deathbed 3 times where he'd be on there, they'd give him the end of life pack, and they'd come and tell us, say, listen, it could be any time now, it could be seconds, could be minutes, could be an hour, anytime. And he'd bounce back and be completely fine again. 3 times I moaned for him in that state. So I never thought my dad was going anywhere when it come to it, you know. because his mental state was unbelievable. Like, still teaches me now, like, the place he was in, and he's still in his head, he was not going anywhere. And he bounced back three times from being on the end of life pack, three times.
So do you think that's where you get that fighting mentality?
Yeah, most definitely.
Mentally?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and what saddened me the most was my dad always said, listen, son, I'm not going anywhere until you win a world title. And it was 2 weeks before my first world title. That saddened me the most. That's what I couldn't get out of my head.
Yeah, but you've done the gold and...
I've done a lot, but still, as a person that always wants to achieve something, like, you achieve one goal, then you build a shelf above it, and then you aim for the next. You know, you forget about your achievements that you've already done. You just keep going for the ones that are in front of you, not the ones that you've got and that they're behind you now because they're on the shelf.
How long did you take after that fight then? Did you take a layoff?
Well, not by choice. I fought him in September, and I didn't get out in the ring till the May. So I had a long time out there again, but it went through, like, I'd just come off that great fight, fantastic entertainment, you know, high profile fight, and then he didn't put me out till March. Like, I was always ready to fight. I stayed in the gym, I stayed training, but I didn't get out till May, and it was literally, it was on a day's notice, the fight.
What?
It was on a day's notice. So I wanted to fight, and then they got me opponent one day before the show, and I fought.
So, how was your relationship with Eddie Hearn?
I mean, I think it's good. But the way I'm, like, I'm talking through this now, and I'm thinking, what's Eddie doing here? Why has he put me against Mendy at the first start when I didn't need to be? And then he tells me I've got to fight Linares with no other option, you know. And then from there, then I didn't get out till May. And then I end up fighting Lemachenko. You know, but listen, it is. I've always wanted to fight the best. I've never shied away from that.
Yeah, and that's clear to see.
And Eddie's always put me in with the best.
So it's fair play then, isn't it?
So
it's clear to see, obviously, with your last two fights against Lomachenko and then Garcia. Lomachenko says it's the best fight he's ever had. It's the toughest fight, especially with your reach and the power that you had for him. I don't know why he won so many rounds, if I'm honest as well. I'm not being biased, but you did win a few rounds.
Yeah, I thought that
how was it getting into that fight?
Yeah, that annoyed me as well, because it was a fantastic fight, great action. Yes, he won fair and square. Not stating that, but, you know, I certainly won at least five of the rounds out of the 12, you know, I think. But it was a great fight. It was fantastic. You know, Lemachenko is an unbelievable fighter, you know, ranked number one pound for pound on the planet. But, you know, I hurt him a few times and caused him a lot of problems. And, you know, it was a fantastic fight for the fans. They certainly got the money's worth out of it.
How was it going into the fight? Because it's a massive fight. It's a mega fight, those ones, aren't they?
You know,
Was there anything different about that?
No, nothing was different. Still trained. To be fair, the training camp was a little bit too long.
How long?
I had a hard 12 weeks of work, which for the way I am and my type of body, I didn't need 12 weeks. You know, I probably could have done with a 9-week one.
Can you overtrain then?
Yeah. Oh, easy. And that's probably what I did a little bit the last couple of weeks was, you know, I didn't need it. But you live and you learn, don't you, as you move on. But, I didn't change nothing, but everyone was writing me off. So, I mean, like, not only am I fighting the best guy pound for pound on the planet, everybody was also telling me I was getting knocked out in two rounds. Everyone. The likes of Johnny Nelson and the Sky team, they was all telling me more or less. Not directly to my face. Well, a couple of them was. You know, basically one of them looking at me, telling me, how do you think you're going to win? I'm like, I'm a Sky fighter. You should be at least backing me to my face. Mm-hmm. Not... I just don't understand how you think you're going to win, you know. So there was all that as well going into the fight.
So how do you deal with that then? Like, people on your own corner are kind of, Lomachenko's a great fighter, but you kind of still think, right, there's chances here. I would always think, even no matter who it is, there's always a possibility that some, yeah, there's always upsets, but how much of an underdog were you getting into that?
Well, massive underdog. You got to bring a bit of macho out into you, and you got to bring a bit of macho and say, grit your teeth and say, right, let's
Did that
have
keep
it.
The fire then to last the distance and keep going and keep chipping away?
Yeah,
which I don't think,
definitely.
I think you're only one, or there's only two that's went the distance with Lomachenko.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was. I think out of about 10 world champions he'd box, I think he'd stopped 9 of them. So, yeah, but I'd never wanted to be in there to say, oh, I've gone the distance with him. I wanted to win. I wanted to hurt him. I wanted to win. To be fair, I should have put it on him more. I should have pressed the fight, gone forward and put it on him more, instead of being looking to try and counter him and go on the back foot.
And then a long layoff till the Garcia fight.
And then 16 months out the ring. Like, makes a big difference, 16 months out the ring.
How long, how was that, how did that affect you mentally?
Quite a bit, really. I mean, 16 months out the ring is a hell of a long time to go out the ring. But not only that, is I've got, like, it was 16 months since I made lightweight. You know, my body's naturally probably got bigger and grown, and since making that weight. You know, if you're making that weight, you're bringing the weight back down a couple of times before that, it's not too bad. But just 16 months out of the ring was just a hell of a long time. Like, being involved, being in that, in the fight frame of mind, and, you know, and being involved in fight weeks and having that pressure and the nerves and stuff like that. It was a long time since I felt anything like that. And it was hard for me going up. I went over to America for Christmas, away from my family. Very stressful for me on the inside. Hated it. Hated every second being away from my family over Christmas and things like that.
How did you prepare for that fight then? Knowing that, again, more hate from this young kid who's...
Yeah.
Potentially, everyone's saying he's going to be the next pound-for-pound best fighter on the planet.
Yeah, do you know what? To be fair, I had a lot of loyal fans myself backing me, which was good, and which I really appreciated. Obviously, he's got a hell of a lot of fans backing him. But, yeah, I mean, I got COVID, 5 weeks before the fight, which didn't help. 5 or 6 weeks before the fight, which didn't help. You know, and that wiped me out for about 10, 11 days. In bed with that, and then having that, going then straight into a hard training camp, hammering my body again, not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Not ideal. There's always been little obstacles that I've had to jump over or get by in fights and training.
But you've never turned away from them. You've still done them. Do you know what I mean? You've still stepped up to the plate. Like, it doesn't matter what we. Everything you can learn from is you learn from the fucking losses and the darkness, yeah, and the mistakes. So getting into that fight then, and you sparked him, put him on his ass the second round, were you surprised, or were you thinking I could have knocked him out anyway? Because you seemed, seemed to have been a hesitation when you put him on his ass. Yeah. Why was that?
So I've seen comments say that, but let me tell you now, I've never seen someone spring up like him. He was like a jack in the box. He was up on the count of three, and then the second the ref had wiped his gloves and whatever else, and he was back in that centre, he was all there. So there's no chance I'm gonna go lunging in and against someone that loves throwing his left hook for me to walk on. I needed to be smart, and I'm a good finisher, and I can, once I smell blood in the ring and weakness, I jump all over that. And he was fully back. Like, I've never seen anyone recover and come back so quick from getting knocked down.
Why do you think that is? Young age? What, just?
I don't know. But I've never seen anyone do that before. Like, he bounced, and watching back, he was asleep. Like, he was out cold. He hit the floor, woke up, and jumped straight back up. And I seen him, like, looking at, like, when the ref was counting at him, I was in the corner, and I could see the ref counting at him, and I could see him to his team, talking to his team, saying, ah, it's all good, it's good, I'm fine. Like, he was calming his corner down. And then I thought, like, don't just lunge straight back in, Luke, because he's got good timing with that hook. If I just lunge in a little bit with attack and he throws that hook, then it's gonna turn the fight upside down. So I needed to be smart.
How was it with the only 3,000 fans there? Because it's another super fight. So do you like it that it's not as busy, or does it matter?
It didn't make the slightest bit of difference to me, because every one of them 3,000 fans was cheering for Emmanuel. They was all booing me. I walked out to the ring with all of them booing me. So for, you know, you say, how was it with 3,000 fans? I went from 20,000 fans in my last fight to then 3,000 fans, but then 3,000 fans was all booing me. So it seemed like a lot of fans in there.
Was it a 6th or 7th round for the body shocks? You've never been hit with a body shock like that, have you?
No, seventh round it was. Well, I've watched the fight back once and seen it, and I've seen him throw that shot 3 times before that. And the one, it was nothing, like it landed and there was nothing, didn't affect me in the slightest. And then obviously he was throwing it to the head a lot. So as we exchanged and then he threw the shot, I covered up to the head and he just whipped it under my rib. And it didn't hurt me, bam, as it landed, it didn't hurt me. But then when I stepped back, I just couldn't grab my breath, just couldn't catch my breath. And I just needed to go down to catch my breath. Never been it like that. As a person that wants to win and that's used to winning, and as a winning mentality, you know, it really hurt me mentally and it hurt my pride, because I didn't want to go out like that. I just couldn't. It was just a shot that I just, you know, couldn't do nothing about.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't speak about body shots enough. I don't think that
how
dangerous they are, and to people, and if you've never had one, then you know yourself how fucking dangerous they can be, man. And when people do them, you think how that doesn't look so. But I've
loads of people with body shots and they've gone down, and I've never just thought, oh, body, bam. Like, you don't feel it as yourself because you're the one that's landing it, but, yeah.
After that fight, he was in the dressing room and stuff, and he was asking, is this the best punches you've ever come up against? How are you feeling then? Because it was not everything a bit raw for him to be asking those questions straight away.
You're flying on emotions. Sometimes you can speak a little bit out the box a little bit, and, you know, adrenaline's going, emotions are flying, so it's not the best time to get caught on camera doing an interview. But, you know, he caught me with a shot. No one's ever done that to me before. So the better man won that night. If he didn't land that shot, the fight could have been completely different. You know, I believe that I could have gone on and really took him to pieces in the later rounds. But it's pointless me saying that because it's not what happened.
Potential rematch?
Listen, I'd love it. I love it. I think it was a fantastic fight. The fans loved it. It was a great action fight between me and him. And I think if we went for round two, I think it'd be another fantastic action fight. But for me, wanted things different, you know. For me, wanting it the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Where do you go from here then for the future?
I can go anywhere where I want to go.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear.
I'm in the driving seat. I ain't got to answer to fucking no one. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm my own boss. I can do what I want. That's the position I'm in. I'm fortunate to be in life, because I can do what I want. If, you know, I can continue boxing. If I want to do something else, I'll do something else. Like, I'm good for life. My family's good, happy. So I'm in a fantastic place. I'm in the driving seat, and I don't need to answer to anyone if I don't want to, you know. But there's still a lot of passion, still a lot of desire, there's still goals to be reached.
Get
so,
a world title, eh?
Yeah, like I say, there's still a lot in me that wants to achieve and win, so we'll see.
Who would you like to fight?
Who's the... Name the best 3 fighters in the division.
Lopez.
Give me one of them. I've sparred a lot with Lopez in Miami.
How is he?
Yeah, he's a good fighter. I'd love that chance. And he knows I'm a good fighter.
Mm-hmm. What about, could you go and fight Taylor?
Yeah, possibility, yeah. Certainly, yeah.
Do you think that could happen?
I think there's a possibility.
That'd be a cracking fight.
That'd be an unbelievable fight. That would be an unbelievable fight for the UK, me and Taylor.
Your division is tasty though, eh?
Yeah. It's the best division in the world.
Yeah, it's a tasty fucking
division,
man.
With the biggest names in the world.
It's the biggest pussies as well, isn't it? That's what it's all about, man, is business. You've got a tattoo in your arm, it's for the Olympics. What's that? I forgot to touch on that earlier.
I've got a tattoo on my ribs.
Yeah, is that?
And that's
the goddess?
So that's off the Olympic gold medal, mm-hmm. that tattoo. Everyone was getting the rings, and I thought, and then I thought about it, and I was looking at the gold medal, and I thought, you've got this gold medal now. Why don't you just get that tattooed on you?
Yeah.
On you there, so I did.
How was Freddie Roach to train with?
Yeah, well, I didn't really do.
Much with him.
No, I went out there. I went out there for. I only went out there training for a couple of weeks as an amateur, and did bits and bobs. But he actually wasn't there at the time. He was busy with other fighters. But I trained in the gym, seen all the fighters go in there. Did a little bit of pads with his brother. And that was that.
So do you think then better rest, couple more fights this year then? Are you just going to go with the flow?
Yeah, well, listen, if I'm there, I'm wanting to fight the best. I want to be busy. I want to be busy. I don't want to be waiting around.
There are talks of Joshua fight and Fury fight in June. Who are you picking?
Going off last performances.
Yeah.
It's always a difficult one. I mean, for one, this is why boxing's so exciting, because you never know. I think Joshua, out of all the heavyweights, has the best chance of beating Tyson Fury. I think he's got the best chance of beating Tyson Fury out of them all. But Tyson Fury, he's on fire. He's on form, you know, and he's a fantastic heavyweight fighter. So probably edge it Tyson Fury, but I don't want to say that, because Joshua, I love Joshua, he's a good guy, he's my friend. But yeah. I don't know, I'd probably edge Tyson Fury.
It's a fight that everybody wants to see. Like, this is a thing with yourself as well, you want to fight the elite. Do you think a lot of boxers swerve big fights?
Yeah, 100%.
Why is that though?
Because they just want to take the easiest fights and earn the money. A lot of them at lightweight. Who is it that's fighting the best? I mean, if you don't have to. A lot of them now are talking about fighting the best, and yeah, you know, you got to fight the best, and this is what makes boxing exciting. And then the next thing is the two top guys aren't fighting each other. They're both fighting someone else that out of real relevance. And it's just like, you're talking it, but you're not doing it.
You've got three sons. Do you think any of them potentially future world champion, or do you want to keep them away from the sport?
My two sons at the moment aren't showed any interest in boxing.
Are you relieved?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I am in one way, and then in another, I'm not, because I could teach them to be the best. You know, with all my experience and everything, what I know, I could teach them to be the best. But then, another thing, you know, boxing's not everything in life. So if they want to do something else and they have passionate in something else, and I'm all for backing what they want to do. I don't know with my youngest son, we'll see, you know, never say never. I don't think the wife wants that, but
seen enough, has she?
Yeah, one of them, I've got one son that's just mad for football, loves football.
What team?
He's a Man City fan.
Is he? Yeah. From Hull?
He's a Man City fan. But he's in the Hull City Academy, and he loves it. You know, he loves that competition. He loves football, which is crazy because I've never introduced it to him. Something he got himself and, you know, loves. And then my oldest son is a good thinker. So I just got into golf with him. So, but just only for fun, you know.
That's a great sport, golf.
Yeah,
traveling
we're doing
the
it
world,
together.
You can play into your 70s and 80s. Nobody gets harmed. There's a good crust to make from it as
exactly.
well if you get pro. It's
exactly.
Brother, I thoroughly enjoyed your conversation. But before we finish up, because I know you've got the mental health app, which you can't touch on. But for anybody that's maybe in a struggle just now, maybe battling, because I know you've battled yourself with losing your dad and coming back from defeat. What advice would you give for them?
I just think, you know, there's a lot of people always with social media is what's going on there, searching for what everybody else is doing. And I think sometimes you've got to take a look at what you have got in life instead of looking at what you ain't got. Look at the things that you wouldn't change. Write a couple of things down every day what you're grateful for. What you're grateful for, you know, and just what things wouldn't you change in your life that you really appreciate. You know, and just to try and focus on the now. Don't be trying to think too far ahead in the future. You think if your head's too far in the past, it's just like going to be a stuck record. Just concentrate on the now and try and be as positive as you can. Flood yourself with positivity. Just if you're sitting there right now, just start telling yourself you are, you're this, you're that, you're great, you're fantastic. You know, and sooner or later, your body will start believing it and your mind will start accepting it. You know, I think just little things that could help here and there, I'd try that.
Fair play, brother. Excited to see what you do for the future. Yeah. I believe you'll get a world title. Thanks for coming on today, giving me your time to tell your story. It's very much appreciated. And God bless you, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You can also watch my podcast on my YouTube channel. The link is in the bio if you'd like to subscribe. You can follow me on my social media platforms to see who my next guest is. Follow me on Facebook at JamesEnglish11, Twitter JamesEnglish0, Instagram JamesEnglish2. You can also download these podcasts on iTunes or Spotify.